Here's the thing. I will back you off the ledge with this comment, you know,
Okay.
because this is where if you appreciate the long history of Alabama football, if you've been following the team like I have since a kid, you'll go back to a worse beating, a 38-6 beating for the national title in 71 with Alabama losing to Nebraska in the Orange Bowl. Alabama undefeated that year, fresh off of a 31-7 whooping of Auburn, a team that featured the Heisman Trophy winner in Pat Sullivan. And what did Alabama do after that? Oh, they did nothing except become the team of the decade with three more national titles that decade.
Wow. See, I like the way you and I kind of think about this, or maybe the way that you think, and you could supplement what I'm thinking about here, because I was born in 78, so I don't cover those years the way that you could help me connect the dots. But because we've been talking about Nick Saban hitting the reset button here with all these new coaching hires. I mean, think about it. I mean, look at what Nick Saban is doing. Is that what he's doing? So, man, you may have just gave me my topic for tomorrow. Because he's hitting think about it. He's hitting the reset button here in Tuscaloosa.
Well,
I mean, he's doing something.
And how much you follow the team since you're there a lot closer than I do, although I certainly keep up with the squad. But, you know, to me, as far as the 2018 coaching staff, did he have to give up a little of coaching to benefit the 100%. Recruiting standpoint? I mean, because that's the feeling I get, and he thought that some of these individuals would grow into their positions.
100%. 100%, Johnny. And let me tell you, sometimes when you don't win, you're still effective at what you're doing. And you got to look at Kirby Smart for just a couple of minutes, okay? Think about what he did, okay? Think about Nick Saban here for just a couple of minutes with what Kirby Smart, he signed like 15 4-stars and 7 5-stars. Nick Saban immediately said, okay, I'm bleeding. Give me the bandages. I've got to bandage this up. I've got to be able to correct this mistake. And so what did he do? He went out and got youth to counter the recruiting side of things. That's what happened. I mean, he went out and said, you know what, I cannot, because I know that I built my program on Jimmy's and Joe's. I've got to have the five-star. For my system to work, I got to have better players than you do. And so he tried to stop the bleeding with the recruiting side of things. And he hired some apprentice carpenters that couldn't build the building without guidance. And it got him. The gamble that Nick Saban took backfired on him.
I think the other part, too, and you certainly saw a lot of this seeping out over the last couple of weeks, too, I think he lost a little bit of his loyalty from the coaches on that staff. And I think that there'll be consequences down the road because maybe not impact them with their current jobs. But, you know, the coaching fraternity, you know, everybody remembers. And you tell me if you feel that same way, because I really truly believe there were some bridges burnt, not only by decisions made to go to other programs. If you're taking a head coaching job, I don't fault you at all as far as that is concerned. But if you're also giving away some of the secrets and letting some of those things leak out there, I just think there'll be consequences down the road. Your thoughts?
No, I think it's a great point. And I think you've got to look at guys. Johnny, I think it's human nature. If I went to my employer and I said, I'm turning in my 2-week notice, I'm going to go to a bigger, badder radio station. There's a lot of employers that just say, forget it. You're done. And there's a reason why, because they don't feel like that they're going to pay you for that quality 2 weeks of work. I think it's just human nature. We've all done it. I've done it. You've done it. Everybody, you turn in the 2 weeks. Are you truly giving everything that you've got?
See, I do, and I did in both situations, and with my...
Well, then you're an outlier. You're an outlier. You're one of those rare people that are able to keep the psychology side of the grind.
But you know what it is? I'm more loyal to myself, though, with those things. I don't want to let myself down. And so as far as with regards to how you're judged or whatever, I'm my harshest critic. And no matter what I'm doing, whether from the marketing standpoint of my roles and responsibilities to being on the air, I'm just used to being the best version of me possible each and every day. And I won't settle. It's not about necessarily what I'm doing as far as whether or not I let down an employer or not. I don't want to let myself down, most importantly.
No, I mean I hear you, and I think that works with some, but it doesn't work with everybody, and I think that's the issue that you're talking about. Listen, you go back 15 days, Nick Saban did not get everything that he could out of that coaching staff, or did he? I mean, maybe this coaching staff was so much of an apprentice when you get in those championship games that it was not exposed. Now, I know the SEC, folks up in Knoxville or down in Oxford or Starkville or Auburn or Baton Rouge, they're laughing right now at Alabama. But should they be? Because they were not able to take advantage of really a down year in coaching for Nick Saban.
Right.
And so as they're giggling and laughing, you got to look back on yourself and go, ooh, if we couldn't take advantage then, when are we going to get it?
I mean, not a great defense this year. And, you know, here's LSU getting shut out at home. Mississippi State getting shut out as well. If I'm those two programs, I'm looking at myself a little embarrassed.
Sure. So, but it got exposed against Clemson and his staff. But nobody in the SEC could expose them. And so if you're a – you know, if you're a fan of one of those programs, you got to kind of look back a little bit and go, man, when are we ever going to get this guy? And see, that's the positive side. I gave my fans, the listeners today, a big dose of reality check today. It was not good for them because we talked about something. And, Johnny, I was going to discuss this with you, but, I mean, you're the guy that's throwing out the questions. There was something that was published on ESPN on Sunday during the AFC-NFC championship game I think most people miss about Alabama. I think it's been missed all over the country because of the NFC and AFC championship and the way that those games played out. And if you don't mind, I'll take you there for just a second. I'd love to get your thoughts.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. ESPN.com, Tom Van Haren is the article Chris Lowe and Mark Slaybaugh contributed. Back of the article, it says four assistant coaches hired at Alabama. Sources, four assistant coaches. You go to NCAA tab, bottom of the article. Co-defensive coordinator and inside linebacker coach Pete Golding, which may or may not be the defense coordinator here, who assumed the play calling from Tosh Lapoy during the first month of the 2018 season, is expected to remain on Alabama staff, according to sources. How big of a story would this have been if that breaks in September, that you got to take the play calling responsibilities away from Tosh Lapoy to give to Pete Golding?
Oh, it'd be huge.
And see, I think that would slip by a lot of us because we were focused on the NFC and AFC championship. It was published Sunday afternoon, almost during the game. And it didn't have a big teased headline. And I just clicked it because I cover Alabama. Read the bottom of the paragraph. Last two sentences there is when he said he assumed the play calling from Tosh Lapoy. Think about that for a minute. I mean, that is a major headline if that is the case. Now, we heard rumors here. But that's with three reporters that I respect, Tom, Chris, and Mark. That's huge.
But here's the other part, though, not just the play calling standpoint I'm concerned, but also preparation. And I go back to the words. They were just a couple of short sentences, but they had huge ramifications from my standpoint with Nick Saban getting ready to go into the locker room at halftime, talking about how Clemson, some of the things they were doing were things that other teams have tried, but we didn't practice against it. What does that mean? That means to me. So I understand as a head coach, you oversee the entire, you're the CEO of Football Incorporated. I get that. But at what point are you also not saying, how come we're not doing this or that?
Well, and see, I think you add all these comments together and you come up with a conclusion that it goes back to the first question out of the gate that we talked about with Kirby Smart. He knew that he couldn't lose in another elite recruiter. Tosh Lapoy is an elite recruiter. This was all Georgia putting pressure on Nick Saban made him gamble, and the gamble did not pay off for Nick Saban. It was a loss. It was a loss. I mean, if you're going to remove a guy from play calling, because if you notice the sentence, and I know I dissect these words, during the first month of the 2018 season, that may have been after Louisville. It may have been after Arkansas State. That's an early, it's five game in the month of September, so it could be any of those five games. It could be after the first game, the second game, third game, fourth game.
You wouldn't think, it would have happened against Ole Miss, knowing the way Alabama controlled things against Ole Miss, so it may have happened even before that.
Yeah. So when you begin to kind of look back at that, I'm telling you, man, I did a complete show out of that those two sentences right there, because I just think it tells us a lot. It tells us the gamble did not pay off for Nick Saban. This one struck out and backfired on him.
How much of, from a truth standpoint, that the meeting is there and everybody's looking around and there's no Dan Enos and nobody understands why he's not there? My guess is somebody, as far as those coaches on that staff knew, maybe Nick Saban didn't know, but some other coaches had to have known that.
Well, and I'd hate to be the one that, you know, we were talking about having the integrity enough to finish the job, but there's more to this story. And let me kind of clear the air a little bit with this one, okay? Nick Saban, if he wanted Dan Enos in Tuscaloosa, he would still be in Tuscaloosa. But Nick Saban saw, this is my guess, Nick Saban saw Sark available and said, how do I get Dan Enos out of this spot? I promised him this, I promised him this, I promised he was going to be my OC, just like Mike Loxley. I mean, Loxley was here on a promise, waiting for that spot because he knew it would launch him into that next step. But Dan Enos was offered a little bit less, no, probably a lot less, than what he originally thought that he was worth. He had to go and secure something for his family. He was quoted on Bo Mattingly's show out in Arkansas of talking about, I had to go get some security for my family. Well, what does that mean? He didn't have security here. He didn't believe that what Nick Saban was trying to do is truly paid off for Dan Enos. I think Nick Saban offered him a lot less. And I think it was it's all part of Nick Saban's plan. I think he saw a better coordinator available, and he said, you know what? Why have Dan Enos when I can go out and get Sark? I can go out because I've watched this guy. I've worked with him. It's another gamble. And if you look at Nick Saban and the security blanket hires that he's made with Sal Cincinnati returning, you look at some other names coming back to Tuscaloosa, or connections with Nick Saban, he's going with veteran coaches that are proven in this league. I think Sark was one of those that he could say, hold on a minute, I don't know if I can go back to Dan Enos. And I think that was all, even though it appears, and Bruce Feldman did a great job, and I think everything he said in that article was 100% accurate. I think the other part of that is he lowballed him, and he forced that hand of Dan Enos to leave in the middle of the night.
What was your take, and by the way, visiting with Ryan Fowler out of Tuscaloosa with Tide 102.9, to the point where, okay, on day three of August drills, this is when I go off on the coaches. Just to that point, and you know, you and I, we have followed the program enough where under Nick Saban with Alabama, we can almost predict how he's going to respond after a game, whether he goes off with the media, whether he goes off and talks bad about his team, or he embraces them. You get to the point where you can almost predict how that's going to happen. But do you feel like it's even to the point? And I understand there's not a wasted day, 365 days out of the year. But do you think it's to that point where we know on day three of August drills that this is the day he goes off on the coaches?
I think Nick Saban could tell pretty early, but if he was able to tell, why did he get Darren into hiring Tosh Lepore? Because he did go on. See, this is what doesn't make sense, because Nick Saban does everything calculated, and he does things for a reason. Maybe he was trying to get their attention. I don't know if that necessarily, but I do think that he had, with his IQ of football, he had to know from an early beginning that, I've made a mistake. And see, I think that look at the championship game at halftime or on the sidelines, Johnny, that wasn't the Nick Saban that we've covered for 12 years.
No, that was the Nick Saban knowing that we're not going to win this game. That was what Nick Saban was showing us, body language, that our team's not prepared, our coaches aren't prepared, we're not ready, we're not going to win this game. And I've never seen that before since the start of 2008.
100%. 100% agree with you. It was a look that it was just – it was so strange to see Nick Saban have that look. And it was kind of like – I was there, and it was just a it was a weird 50 seconds to go, three timeouts, going in the locker room, not even trying to get down the field and score with one of the best quarterbacks in the country. And
but here's the thing that drives me crazy, especially midway through the second quarter. Alabama had a couple of things going its way, even with, up 16-14, but they were controlling the time of possession. But a couple of things stood out is the fact that if you have the defensive front for Clemson, their specialty, their leaders, winded, take full advantage of that and keep them running around. And yet this is where I thought that Mike Locksley called a terrible game in the sense like, well, we're doing everything that got us here. Well, guess what? It's a chess match, and it's okay to make adjustments, especially against a team like Clemson, as well-coached they are. But it's just like with the fact that Trevor Lawrence, we've talked about this before, on their first drive, he looked rattled. And so you've got a true freshman who last year was in high school, a true freshman rattled his first drive, and you can understand why with the national title riding on it. And what does Michael Locksley do? He proceeds to, here's Tua Tagovailoa with the interception, the pick six. Run the ball. Let Trevor Lawrence think about these things. This is where Alabama was outcoached in that ball game, especially in the first half.
Johnny, you and I we're synced up today. I mean, and I know we are quite often, but I'm telling you, I can't explain it. It was Nick Saban hired a group of apprentice carpenters to build a building, and he walked out in day number 14 or 15, and he went, "Do you guys even know what a ruler is?" That was the look. Because he knew he was beat. What? He knew at that point that nobody was able to expose them, but Clemson was able to do it, and you got to give them credit.
All right, this is another thing. Go back to the offseason. Knowing these things and knowing that you're not 100% sure how this is going to play out, why commit to Rolling with the Tide, a four-part series on ESPN? Why put yourself in that situation?
To distraction.
Okay. Here's the thing, though. What happens when you're these coaches who are not ready to be in these positions and you're getting that kind of attention? You're not distracted. All of a sudden, you think you're better than you are.
Right. But see, all of it goes back because ESPN's sitting there at the negotiating table. And they're going, okay, we want you, but if you don't agree to it, we're going to go to Athens, Georgia.
Fine. Here's the thing, fine, because, you look back, I still go back to the fact these coaches were not prepared to be in that kind of limelight. They weren't.
Okay, I 100% agree. And, Johnny, you brought up something else that's worth the conversation. But it's to go back. See, Nick Saban, because of what Kirby Smart, on the pressure that he was putting on Nick Saban, he was putting pressure on Nick Saban. Nick Saban had to go, okay, I've got to remove this. We don't have fun in Tuscaloosa. How do I do that? I open up practice. And that's the way he did.
And look, I understand. And they do have fun. And I was around, as far as their spring games before. And I understand what that means. And so they do. But they're also serious about winning championships. But here's the thing. I don't care about, your four-part series in August. What do people remember about Nick Saban in 2018? Throwing down the headphones, destroying a $2,000 pair of headphones during the Oklahoma game with the Tide up big in that first half. That's what they remember, just like they remember Bill Belichick destroying his nice Microsoft Surface Pad, too, on Sunday in that Kansas City game.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, that four-part series did a lot, too. I think it also helped Nick Saban manage the quarterbacks, too. Because if you look back at those four episodes, who was the superstar of those four episodes? Jalen Hurts. He was like the star of those four episodes. Because that's another part. Even though it wasn't, you got to manage that. He had to manage it. Those were issues. They were not what cost him at the end, but you only have 24 hours in the day. You had to manage quarterbacks. You had to make sure that you kept a backup quarterback ready to go when you needed him, if you needed him. Alabama did. That paid off for them in Atlanta. But it also required time and investment in Jalen Hurts.
Doubt was.
It paid off. It paid off. It was calculated.
One more question, Ryan, before we let you go. As far as offseason-wise, doubt-wise, as far as from the fan base, because the doubt certainly is there. You can just see it in social media. You wonder, and because it wasn't the loss. It wasn't like losing on the last play with Clemson 2 years ago on their last offensive play. This was, you know, a major disappointment, major blowout by 28. Where's the doubt, and when's the last time the fans have had this kind of doubt in the offseason following Alabama?
Well, I'm actually writing this question down because I'm going to have to ask the audience. There's doubt in Tuscaloosa. Pat Forty should have saved the article for 3 years because it would have been much more believable now. He wrote the article, "The Foundation is Cracked," in detail. If he would have waited until now and wrote the article, it would have been more believable than it was back in 2015 after the Ole Miss 5-turnover game. He wrote the article too early. Because now if you write that article, you have more subscribers, you have more believers that go, man, this guy's making a brilliant point. And so when you back up just a little bit, there is some doubt. And I'm going to tell you the number one doubt is who gets this defensive coordinator spot. Because what that article on ESPN told us, that we have a good sample size of what a Pete Golding defense looks like. Because if he was calling the plays, right, if he took over the play calling from Tosh Lapoy, the buzz is that he may be the favorite of getting that defensive coordinator job here in Tuscaloosa. What does that tell you about Alabama's defense? If he took over in September play calling, as an Alabama fan, would you buy stock in Pete Golding? I know I wouldn't.
No, and that's a very good point. And the other part, too, about that question, you can go part one and two on it. What does it mean as far as doubt? Are we talking doubt SEC-wise? Or are we talking doubt on the national level?
National.
Yeah, because... Because here's the thing. Everybody can jump on the bandwagon and be a part of the Clemson win over Alabama. Last time I checked, is Clemson beating Alabama, other than the Auburn win at the end of 2017, that nobody else is beating Alabama. So everybody else, fine, enjoy celebrating with Clemson, but you're not there yet as far as Alabama. So that's why, are we talking doubt SEC or just talking doubt on the national? And I think we're talking doubt on the national part.
100% agree. I mean, SEC fans, you guys are licking it up right now. You're enjoying this Alabama loss. I wouldn't be licking it up. I wouldn't be smiling knowing that they couldn't take advantage of a weak staff in Tuscaloosa.